The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. You must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Welcome to the BS Report. It is a Labor Day Monday here in Southern California. We're taping this for Tuesday, the big football preview. We're going to have Cousin Sal doing the week one lines. That's going to be part two of this podcast. Part one, you've been waiting for him. You've been wondering where he was. You've been asking for him. You've been begging for him. Now he's here from the NFL Network, Mike Lombardi. What is happening?
Hello, Bill. How are you?
Oh, man, it's a pleasure to finally get on the phone. Actually, we've been on the phone. It just wasn't for podcast purposes.
We had our, exactly.
We had our off-the-record conversations where we get to swear and make fun of people and stuff. But now we're
not allowed to swear on this.
Yeah,
I didn't know we were.
If you want, you can swear. But
I've heard beeps before when I listen to the programming.
So, well, I don't even know where to start, but we might as well start here. Do you feel like this is like last year where you have this circle of teams that will go about seven or eight deep, and one of those seven or eight teams will win, and it would be stupid to say which one of those teams will be the team at this point of the season?
You know, I always feel like it's a league of, Bill Walsh told me this back in 1984, is you're competing against eight teams, and I still think it's a league of eight. But this year, more than ever, the NFC to me is fascinating. Not that I think there's 11 teams that can go to the Super Bowl in the NFC, but I think there's 11 quality teams that are going to be disruptive, and they're going to cause some conflict. And there could be a team, you know, the Packers 2 years ago, if Detroit doesn't beat Tampa Bay down there, and last year the New York Giants, if the Cowboys could just make a field goal, you know, the last two seasons we've seen two Super Bowl champions that are on the brink of not even making the playoffs. So I think it's going to come back down to that again in the NFC.
All right, so you said 11 teams. Well, the three NFC East would be Cowboys, Eagles, Giants. NFC North would be Bears, Packers, Lions.
Six.
Saints, Falcons, NFC South. Niners, NFC West. So who are the other two teams? I have a feeling I know who one of them is, but who's the other one?
I'm counting on Seattle, and I think Carolina is the sleeper in the South.
Whoa, and Carolina!
I think Carolina is a hard team to play, and I think they're going to be harder once the season starts, and they're going to start unveiling some things that they can do with their offensive system. I just think they're a hard team to play. If it's to me, the 11th team is either Carolina or Washington. And last year I went with Washington, and I got, you know, I made a horrible mistake because I figured they could stay healthy, and I thought they would do something with the quarterback. This year I'm going away from them. It'll probably be them. But I think those are the 11 somewhere. The 11th team is Carolina or Washington.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Seahawks from Seattle, because I've been eyeing them a little bit. I haven't decided what I'm doing with my big sleeper this year. Although I guess they were 8-8 last year, so they're not. It's not like they were 3-13 last year or something. But, you know, every year, somebody from one of the two conferences that we don't totally expect ends up in the Super Bowl. It would have to be Russell Wilson who brings them, you know, with all the other things they have going. It'd have to be Russell Wilson. Could Russell Wilson in his first year be good enough to do that?
Well, I think he just has to be. Take those negative plays that Tavares would make even worse and just make them a positive, you know, where it's not there, tuck it down and run for 12 yards. You know, Seattle's going to win. If they win 10 or 11 games, it's going to be because their defense, they're tough to play in Seattle. You know, it's very difficult. The defense is very good. They can stone people. It's hard to run the football against them. And they can win in the kicking game. So if they can do that at home, you know, they can go 7-1 at home. And now they've got to find a way to be 3-5 on the road. And that's going to take Russell Wilson not turning the ball over. And if he plays within himself and he makes the plays he's capable of making, I think it is conceivable that they can get the 10 wins.
And another thing that you and I like to look for, and we're really aligned now. We're like the Batman and Robin of NFL prognosticating, even though it always turns out badly. We like to look at if somebody had a good draft. And it really seems like the Seahawks, nailed their draft last year. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think this Robert Turbin kid they drafted in the fourth round, I think is going to be a really good football player, especially if Marshawn Lynch takes the trip back to see the commissioner and get suspended for some time. I think that's going to be prove out to be a really good pick for him. And I think, obviously, Russell Wilson has been hit. And anytime you can get some stability at the quarterback position, you know that sets your franchise in the right direction. And then, you know, they're always an interesting team. They don't mind signing players that most teams wouldn't sign. And when you look at Braylon Edwards, you say, oh, you know, but 2 years ago, Braylon Edwards was a really good player.
Right.
And then he had the knee problem, and now they're saying Braylon Edwards is back to being where he was 2 years ago. And if that's the case, you had him in there, Sidney Rice is back, you know, all of a sudden they've got some pieces offensively that looks like they have a chance.
What about the first rounder they took? He's been getting some defensive rookie of the year buzz. Do you like him?
I think Bruce Irvin's a really good player. I think he's a guy that can play opposite of Chris Clemens. Chris Clemens is the unsung hero there on the defensive line, even though they rewarded him with an even bigger contract than the one he got from Philadelphia a few years back. So, you know, to me, the strength of their defense is a guy named Red Bryant,
yep,
who is hard to run the ball against. He's strong. He's physical. He can go inside. He's a dominating blue-chip defensive lineman. And then these other guys that can play off of them because they can run really effectively and then make a lot of plays, I think they have a real chance. And, you know, that crowd noise, when you have a guy like Bruce Irvin on the field in Seattle, when nobody can hear a snap count and he's that fast coming off the edge, it's really going to be a combustible situation.
You had you did your blue chip article for offensive and defensive players, and Red Bryant, I think you made a blue chipper, correct?
I did. I mean, I love Red Bryant. I think Red Bryant, you know, I thought more teams, and there were a lot of teams going after him in free agency. You know, he was a guy that you didn't get a lot of fanfare. Well, what do you do with him on third down? He makes everybody better, but you can't run the ball on him, especially when they play him out at end and he's on the strong side of the formation. He just takes every tight end and stuffs him in the backfield.
A lot of Atlanta preseason buzz about, you know, maybe this is the year they break through. Everybody thought it was going to be last year. It obviously wasn't. They've had some playoff failure. Feels like a little bit of a make-or-break season for them with the coach and the QB. It seems like they lucked out here with the division because the Saints, I mean, everything that could possibly have gone wrong with New Orleans in the offseason did, except for Breeze getting hurt. Is this the year Atlanta breaks through?
Well, to me, look, Atlanta starts out last year. They lose in Chicago, and they lose in Tampa Bay. And they still win 10 games for the remaining of the season. They're a very good home team, but they have trouble when they go away from town, when they have to play on the road. And when they do that, I think it's going to be even more critical this year because of all these other teams that they're playing against. And Atlanta might have a better team this year, but might not make the playoffs. They can't stub their toe in Houston like they did last year and lose 17-10. They can't stub their toe and lose what they did with New Orleans at home. They have to win their home games, and they've got to find a way to win on the road. And I don't know if they're good enough to win on the road in their offensive and defensive lines. I think that, to me, is where they struggle. You know, everybody, well, they've got great skill. Yeah, Julio Jones is a great player. And so Roddy White, when he catches the ball, he's a great player. But you've got to be able to rush the pass, and you've got to be able to pass protect, especially when you go on the road. And I don't know if Atlanta can do that as effectively as some of the other teams in the NFC.
And also, it is funny, like, you know, 9 months pass and you kind of forget what happened the previous season. They got killed in Giant Stadium, right? And that was only in January. And, I get it. They're a year, you know, they have a year more experience, all that stuff. But to me, it does seem like a very similar team to last year's team. I don't see how they could have changed that much.
You know, they remind me of my 76ers. They look good. And then they go to play somebody who's a little bit better than them, and they're not really the same caliber when they play them on the road.
Right.
And I think that to me is kind of what the Falcons are. And people say, "Well, you hate the Falcons." No, I don't. But the other factor here we haven't discussed is, you know, I made Michael Turner a top running back in the league, but Michael Turner, when you've had as many carries as he had, over 300 attempts the last few seasons, the miles on the tire, you know, start to wear on you. And if he's not the player, you know, is Schnelling able to carry the big load for them? It's not Rodgers. He's not going to be the down and distance guy all the time. And then that puts all the burden on Matt Ryan. But when I say that, really, it puts more burden on their offensive line than Matt Ryan, because that line was built to run block, play action pass, not to drop back 45 times.
All right. So this would be the first of like 7 times during this podcast that I ask, all right, if you had to bet your life on blank, here you go. had to bet your life on it, New Orleans or Atlanta in the NFC South?
New Orleans.
Yeah, it seems now there's been a New Orleans comeback buzz.
Well, because look, New Orleans is, they still have the quarterback. They've got some toughness with their team. They can run the football when they want to do it. Chris Ivory, they've got more run. The worst running back on the New Orleans Saints team is Mark Ingram.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Well, but they've got so many other backs that they had to keep. Obviously, they were going to keep Ingram, but he's not in the class of some of these other guys. He doesn't run to the same level that Ivory runs, or even this young kid that they signed from Appalachian State as a free agent. So they've got some really talented running backs. They're still good. The scheme's still going to be effective, and I think they'll be better on defense. They won't be as cavalier in their approach to try to attack the quarterback at all costs. I mean, look, that 49er game was one of those where really the calls that were coming in from the sideline on the defensive end, you had to shake your head at because they couldn't handle what they were trying to accomplish.
So you think I don't even know who replaced Greg Williams, but whoever it was is going to be an upgrade.
I think Steve Spagnuolo will be an upgrade.
That's right. That's what it was. Yeah. Oh, Steve Spagnuolo really will be an upgrade. I forgot about that. It's too bad that Ricky Williams is the head coach for 6 weeks. Who's the head coach? It's not Joe
Aaron Cromer.
It's the interim coach.
Yeah, it's the substitute teacher.
This wouldn't even happen like in the NBA, an interim coach.
This is almost worldwide wrestling, where like the manager gets to spend, it's almost like that. But look, I mean, everybody knows their job. And, the decisions that Aaron Cromer are going to have to make are going to have to be set up during the week. And he's going to have to manage the game. And I think that he can do that if he does that effectively and he doesn't mess with Drew Brees or try to do too much. I think for Aaron Cromer, the message is less is more.
I'm excited to see an interim coach argue with a replacement referee. I think that's going to be really awesome. So you think like there's probably three quarterbacks in the entire league who could get away with having an interim coach and still making the playoffs, right? Rodgers, Brees, and Brady? And Peyton Manning, if he can throw more than 10 miles an hour.
Right. But look, here's the thing with this is Brees does so much at the line of scrimmage that he's the coach on the field there. They set things up. He's going to have an influence. Now, where the effect of the losing Sean Payton is going to really show itself is going to be on player development because the scheme's going to be so complex because Brees needs it to be that it's going to be hard for young players to play in New Orleans at receiver. But that's down the road. That's a problem down the road, not now.
So Peyton's not allowed to even email anybody?
I don't think he's allowed to have one conversation. He's not allowed to even, hey, we should run Y stick or Y pump. I don't think he can do any of that.
How would they know, though?
Well, that's the great question. And I think, obviously, if you're Sean Payton, do you really want to risk a five-word text? It's almost, you visualize this to be like The Wire, where they're picking up cell phones at 7-Elevens, so they can have communication. But I don't see why you would take that risk for what little reward you would get out of it.
I could just tell you, if this happened to me with Grantland, I would create a dummy account, and I would be badgering everybody that worked for me. So one of them would have to turn me in. Maybe that's what
he's
afraid of.
You would be at the 7-Eleven picking up the cell phone.
I would be. I'd be emailing under these random Gmail accounts. Uh-oh, there's been another 1,200-word email from TheloniusMonk at gmail.com. I would not be able to stay away, and I don't think he will either. And if they monitor his emails and phone calls correctly, I think this is going to be an even bigger scandal. That'll be one of my predictions for this year. I think this is really interesting because for about most of the summer, people were like, all right, Atlanta, it's time. And now, right as the season got close, all of a sudden there was this little New Orleans turn of events. So we'll see. Now, another thing that seems to be happening lately, and you are a big Kool-Aid drinker of this, is the Joe Flacco breakout season bandwagon. And you're I think, in the front seat, or are you in the front seat?
I'm on the front seat. He makes some throws. I was watching Tennessee play Baltimore last year, week two of the season, and, when they let Joe Flacco let him go a little bit, and when they let him do what he does really well, which is throw the ball outside the numbers, throw the deep digs, when they let him really expand himself and not have to do it when he's behind in the game and their offensive line has to really protect, I think he's one of the best throwers in the league, and he makes so many great throws that they go unnoticed, and I think so much has been said about their defense have to win the games that this is the first time in Baltimore's history that the offense is actually better than the defense in terms of Flacco can carry the team.
And you think that, the thing that surprised me, I can't tell you how much research I did the last 3 days. I actually finally feel prepared. It really seems like they're going no huddle almost all the time.
Yeah, I think, you know, they hired Jim Caldwell from the Indianapolis Colts, and he's got some semblance of what, you know, the Peyton Manning offense. Now, they're not running Peyton Manning's offense, and what I keep saying is they shouldn't run Cam Cameron's offense. They should run Joe Flacco's offense. They should run an offense for Joe Flacco, and I think that's what they're trying to get done. The tempo will help them in terms of being able to mismatch some of the players they have, and Torrey Smith, it's hit or miss whether he catches it, but when he's out there on the field, you better defend the deep part of the field because, A, Flacco can throw it, and Smith can get behind you.
So you feel like Baltimore is an inner circle team. And we're talking about the inner circle. Patriots, obviously, Packers, Texans, mainly because of their division over anything else. You'd put the Saints in there, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, it's like when you watched Alabama play Michigan. I mean, I watched 5 minutes of the game, and I said to my son, I said, what does Michigan have in their offensive playbook that's going to work here today?
Right.
You could see it right. And when you play Baltimore, you ask yourself the question, do you have enough diversity in your offensive playbook to be able to handle what Baltimore does to you? Now, the answer to Michigan was very easily no. They, you know, they were going to have, Robinson was going to have to throw the ball, and they didn't have enough pass protection and enough passing plays design-wise to beat them. So that was easy to figure out. I mean, I don't mean to be a genius to say that, but when you play Baltimore, you better bring a package of plays and a system of offense that's conducive to being able to handle what they do. And not a lot of teams in the league can do that. They'll run out by the third quarter, and then all of a sudden that's when Baltimore really jumps on you and they take over the game.
Yeah, and the worst thing for Baltimore is just they have a tough schedule. Not as tough as the Giants' schedule, but, you know, first 3 weeks, Monday night Cincinnati in Baltimore, at Philly, home for New England. And then they play a Thursday night game against Cleveland.
But they match up really well against Philadelphia. I mean, Philadelphia doesn't defend a lot of things that Baltimore does well. And Cincinnati, for as good as Cincinnati is, Cincinnati has a hard time handling them. And when Baltimore attacks Cincinnati via the passing game, now I know Ray Rice made some big long runs in the game, but when they go after him in the passing game, that's when they expose Cincinnati's weakness, which is in the back seven, which is at their corner position. And I think that really sets it up. I think there has to be a shift fundamentally in terms of how Baltimore perceives themselves. They've got to be able to throw the ball to set up Ray Rice, and they've got to be able to get the lead. They should do what Houston did. Houston went from being one of the worst first quarter teams in football 2 years ago to one of the best ones in terms of scoring points. And that's what, to me, Baltimore's challenge is.
And they have New England in week three, which is a team that they've had a ton of success against. You could make the case, and we've talked about on the podcast, that New England was the third best AFC team last year because, you know, if Houston doesn't have those injuries, maybe they make it. And then if Lee Evans catches that pass, Baltimore makes Super Bowl. New England's better. There's no question, especially defensively. Do you think they did enough to separate themselves from the pack a little bit?
I think New England has to find themselves offensively. I think New England will run the ball more effectively this year, and they've got to be able to throw the football outside the numbers more effectively. I think you saw in the Tampa preseason game, Tampa decided to play some man-to-man, get in their face, try to get after Brady and force him to make throws in the tight windows. And will he do it? Can he do it? Is he able to do it? And all those things have to fall into place. And obviously the Patriots know this is the game plan. I mean, it's the Giants, how to steal the game from the Patriots, play this style. And I think the Giants did it. Obviously the Jets try to do it all the time, and I think you'll see more teams do it. It's better to just play in the soft zone coverage and letting Brady pick you apart. But I do think they'll be much better defensively. I think this is as good a defense as I've seen them in the front seven as they've had since the 2003-04 era. Whoa. When they were really physical. They're going to be hard to play. Now, they're not at Baltimore. Hey, they can stop you. There's going to be plays on the field, but they're getting there. I mean, their power in their front seven is impressive, and it's going to continue to improve as the year goes on. It's offensively, where are they going to be? And when you have concerns with the offensive line, you lose a blue-chip player like Brian Waters. Logan Mankins is a blue-chip player, but he's coming off an ACL. You know, Matt Light last year had, I thought, one of his best seasons. So you lose three top offensive linemen. I think your offense is going to be in a little bit of a transitionary state.
But Belichick has, over the years, no matter who goes down on the O-line, has always seemed to figure out how to stop it. The one thing I can't understand, where is Brian Rod? Like, Belichick and Brady couldn't have just gone to his house and convinced him to play? Well, why won't he come back?
Well, I think he, you know, it's deeper. I think there's some family issues there. The family lives in Dallas. He, you know, he's playing in Boston. It's a little long of a commute. The family can't leave. I think there's a lot of issues that go into this decision. He's towards the end. You know, when he left Kansas City, you know, it was he was back in Boston all by himself. He meant through the whole season, and I think sometimes we as fans don't factor in the personal life of a player when he's making these decisions, and I think that's more of it. I think Brian Walters knows he can still play great football. He knows he's still capable of making money in the National Football League and playing at a high level. I think it's just he's making sure that his family's taken care of, and that may force him to miss the entire season.
Yeah, but can't Brian Walters think about me as a fan?
Well, you know, I think he should.
I'm happy to think about him as a person, but he needs to think about me as a fan, and we need a guard. Come back, Brian Waters. Well, why not trade him the Cowboys? If he lives in Dallas, we'll trade him the Cowboys. Give us your guard.
They don't have very many good guards. I think that's the thing about Brian. Brian Waters played, and when you watch the strength of the ball of the team, like, I mean, Brady had hours to throw the ball. He stood back there like nothing, and you know, I just think that that's going to be a little bit of a problem. I think it's a little problem in Houston. They can mask it better with their zone scheme, but until they get their offensive line figured out and settled, I think that's going to be the issue in Houston for the beginning.
If you were running the Houston Texans, I know you hate this question because it makes it seem like you're lobbying for a job, being a former GM and all, but if you were running the Houston Texans, would you have spent all that money on Arian Foster over losing a couple of the offensive linemen?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Arian Foster was better. The offensive linemen were replaceable parts. Arian Foster on paper says, yeah, you can replace him. You have Ben Tate there. It's a little rich of a deal, but there was no offensive lineman. I think the bigger question is going to be how are they going to sign this whole team? Is Matt Schaub going to be able to come back? Do they have money for him? I think there lies the question. The offensive lineman, that was an easy decision to make. You got to grow your own. Sometimes you have to sit in your office and say, he's a replaceable part. He's a non-replaceable part. We're signing all the non-replaceable parts to extensions. We're going to let all the replaceable parts go.
Would you have signed Arian Foster over Mario Williams?
You know, Mario Williams, to me, they replaced him during the season fairly clearly. Brooks Reed was better. I think Connor Barwin should have probably made my blue chip and red chip team. He was really a good player. So, I would have easily let him go. But Mario Williams, to me, is a sacker, and sackers are great if you have really good coverage. He's not a pressure guy, and pressure guys, to me, are the ones that are irreplaceable.
All right. Buffalo Bills fans just got really super depressed right there. Well, they spent like $100 million on it.
And I like Buffalo. I think they'll be better. I mean, look, Mario Williams against whoever blocks for the Jets at right tackle. I mean, Jason Smith, you think Mario Williams isn't excited for his debut?
I would say yes. It sounds like you like Baltimore the most in the AFC. Am I right?
I like Baltimore and Houston the most. I really do. I think I picked them to go to the conference championship game. I think both of them are good teams. Both of them have good schemes. Both of them require you to be chess thinkers to play them. They have enough depth within their schemes. The concern I have in Baltimore is unless they change diametrically what they do offensively, unless they become more Joe Flacco and not Cam Cameron's offense, then I'm always hesitant to go back there. People say, well, you know, they're losing Suggs. Yeah, Suggs is a huge loss, don't get me wrong, but they're a great red zone defense. And the red zone really makes, that's why they're so successful to keep people out of the end zone.
Well, I'm reading between the lines and I'm a little paranoid. Why does it sound like you're a little bit down on the combination of 35-year-old Tom Brady and the Swiss cheese Patriots offensive line?
Well, I'm concerned about him in September. I think going into Tennessee against that front in the heat and humidity, I think it's going to be a challenge. But look, the Patriots do a great job of game plan. You can never really evaluate the Patriots because they are a scheme-specific offense, that they attack your adjustments within your defensive system. That's what makes them so successful. They know if they get in this formation, you're going to check to this, and they have a play that they have ready to run that attacks what you do. So, you know, that's why it's hard to get a gauge on them. But I think ultimately, for the Patriots, that offensive line has to gel. Vollmer's got to play right tackle. He can't miss. He's got to be able to stay. And I've always worried about offensive linemen who have lower back problems. To me, that's not a good sign. And so that means durability is going to be an issue. So to me, until the Patriots can prove on my machine here in my office that their offensive line is to the level it was last year, then I'm going to have concerns about how well they'll effectively move the football.
What do we do with the AFC West? Because you have the Chiefs, who everybody is looking at as the big comeback year. Everybody's back. Everything went wrong last year, and everybody's back. New coach. But I've watched Romeo Crennel. You're not going to totally talk me into the Romeo Crennel era ever. Then you have the Broncos with Peyton Manning, who, you know, literally couldn't throw the football 6 months ago or whatever it was. You have the Chargers, who brought back Norv for the 19th year. You have the Raiders, who are the Raiders. Somebody has to win that division, unless there's an 8-8 four-way tie, and then they have tiebreakers. But do you like any of those teams?
I like Kansas City, and I know you're not a big Romeo guy, but here's why I like Kansas City. The reasons I do is I think their defense is really good. Obviously, Tom Bahaly missing the opener is going to be a tough situation for them. But they've got other players. Justin Houston played really well last year. I think they can become a better defense. They get Eric Berry back in the secondary. I think Stanford Routes a huge question mark. I never really thought he was a top cover corner, even though he's been paid like one for a long time. So that would be, and defensively they can run and make plays. And Romeo does a good job of taking away what you do well. Offensively, I think they've done a better job of fixing their offensive line. And I think Brian Daboll, being the offensive coordinator for Matt Castle, will make Matt Castle better, and here's why. Because Matt Castle, what I mentioned earlier about New England, about how they are a system-based offense and how they attack your schemes, that's how Matt Castle learns how to play quarterback. Brian Daboll was taught that system. He understands it. He utilized it every place he's been. So there's going to be some symmetry within Daboll and Castle in terms of how they see the offense, how they see attacking the defense, and they can formulate their ideas, and I think it'll be a smooth transition. He won't walk into a quarterback meeting room knowing that the head coach hates his guts, and I think that's a sense of relief as well. So I like Kansas City's team. I think Kansas City can run the football if Peyton Hill runs like he's capable, with Jamaal Charles going back to 2010 for him. I think they play the fourth-place schedule, which we know is always, there's a team coming from the fourth place schedule that always rallies into the playoffs, even though we know they're not a top team, but they do it anyway. And that's why I like Kansas City.
I think their schedule is a little bit scary. I had them marked down as one of my scary schedule teams. They start Atlanta home, which winnable, but you know, not an easy game. At Buffalo, at New Orleans, home for San Diego, home for Baltimore, at Tampa. It's their first six. Like, that's not easy. Then they have they're still at San Diego, they're at Pittsburgh, they're at Denver. So, but yeah, on the other hand, 9-7 might make it. What have you, everybody seems to have varying opinions on this. Peyton Manning, do you like what you've seen and heard so far?
Well, I think everything he says I love. I mean, you know, he's exactly what you want for a guy who's coming back. He's never satisfied. Comfort is never in his vocabulary. But I mean, even he admits that he's not where he needs to be in terms of the velocity of the football, the drive of the ball. His mind is sharp. I thought his pace of the game's well. I think he's back there. He's not worried about his eye levels way up the field. I think all those things are really good. And I think we're not going to know how good Peyton Manning is right now until we get into November and December, when he's had some time to play and get accustomed to the game and his body's had some wear and tear on him. I think that's going to be the key issue for him. And then, look, I've said this before. We've all focused on Peyton Manning, but the reality is this Denver defense has got question marks. They lose Bunkley, one of their best run players. I made him a blue-chip player. Last year he was sensational inside. They lose him to New Orleans. They don't have anybody really. Derek Wolfe's supposed to replace him. Kenny's a rookie. The secondary, to me, is a question mark. They signed, you know, Drayton Florence to be the guy, but he wasn't good enough, so they had to cut him. Where are they at safety? They brought Jim Leonard back. Is Jim Leonard really a good enough player for them?
Okay.
I think there's a lot of questions on Denver's defense that Peyton can't go over and play there for them. So I'm a little – look, they're all in the pack here in the AFC West. Nobody really says that's the best team. Everybody says it's Denver because of Peyton Manning, but nobody really can answer the question, well, how good is Peyton Manning now? Is he Peyton Manning 2010 or is he Peyton Manning 2005? Which one is he?
I think he's going to be best case scenario 2010, and I don't think that's going to be enough.
That's the point.
Yeah.
And that's my point is if he's 2010, is that, do you really remember how he played in 2010?
Wasn't that good?
It's like people say, why hasn't anybody signed Plexico Burress? Well, you know, if you watch him run last year, he can't run. That's why people get caught up in the name and they don't factor in the age.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he was bad, but the 2010 Peyton Manning was not on the level of, the mid-2000s Peyton Manning. All right, multiple choice. These teams will stink. A, the Jets. B, the Steelers. C, A and B. Or D, neither.
Well, neither. I don't think it'll stink. I mean, the Jets' defense comes to play, and they'll play hard, and they're a tough out. I mean, you know, I could see the Jets winning games 13-10. I mean, the Jets' offense is a work in progress, but I don't think
they'll
ever stink.
That's the most generous thing you've ever said in the BS report. Work in progress.
Well, I mean,
what
else can I say
points?
About them? I mean, look, the thing I love about the Jets, they're taking offensive linemen from teams that need offensive linemen. they're signing receivers from teams that are looking for receivers. You know, so either they're really wrong in their evaluation of these guys they claimed at the waiver wire, or they're really right. I mean, when you boil it down, I mean, you know, the thing you always look for is, I always believe this in the league, when a team has a weakness at a position, they always carry too many guys.
Yep.
And, you know, because they think they have so many, and in reality they realize they don't have any. And so, you know, and I think the Jets did that. I mean, you know, at the waiver wire, they're claiming guys, you know, they claim guys down. You know, when you're taking a wide receiver from Miami Dolphins, you know, you got to say to yourself, really, you know, and they claim two offensive linemen from Indianapolis. Now, they weren't awarded those because they had a priority claim on them. But the reality of it is they claim both those guys, and they claim the receiver from Miami. Really? I mean, you don't think Miami needs a receiver?
That's why, you know, we're launching our YouTube channel on Wednesday for Grantland. Jacoby's hired 338 people for it because it's the same thing. He just keeps hiring people. He doesn't feel comfortable. I'm kidding. He's listening. AFC sleeper. If you had to pick a sleeper, who would you pick?
The AFC sleeper. Obviously, I think my sleeper's been Kansas City all along.
Okay, but they're not. I wouldn't call them asleep. I think they're.
Well, you know what? Okay, so
they're sitting on the porch with a blanket.
Well, but I mean, Jacksonville. I'm not going to fall into those. You know, I mean, how many tweets did I get when? And ever Blaine Gabbert completes a pass, my Twitter account lights up. You know, oh my God. You know, but it's the best. But the so Jacksonville's not going to be. You know, Tennessee, and I think Tennessee's got some real issues with their football team in terms of where can they go with the receiver without Kenny Britt. I think that, you know, Walker's a good player, but they have to find out whether he can, you know, do it during the season. And then I think you have to, is Chris Johnson really back to where he was? So they're not a sleeper. They went 9-7 last year.
It can't be the Colts, right?
Well, I don't see how the Colts can. With that offensive line, I'm just hopeful that Andrew Luck can stay healthy for an entire season, even though the Jets claim two offensive linemen that the Colts waived, which I'm still trying to figure that one out.
You love it.
Somehow, I watched the Colts in preseason, and I was praying that Andrew Luck could come out of the game healthy. Meanwhile, the Jets are claiming two of their offensive line. It's just bizarre.
Well, maybe the AFC won't have a sleeper because we're running out of teams, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, well, I guess Buffalo would qualify as a sleeper, and I like Buffalo's team, and I think they have all the earmarks of being a sleeper. But, you know, they're like Kansas City. Are they really a sleeper?
I would say they're a better candidate to be a sleeper because...
Then that would be my candidate. I like Buffalo's team. I think they're close. I don't think they're quite there yet, but I think they're close.
I like them as well. I was... and the schedule is in their favor. They're only at San Francisco, at Houston, at New England, probably their three toughest games. Like, and all the home games are winnable, you know, and they get to play the Jets, they get to play Buffalo. I think the Jets are going to be worse than you. I really think, like, I think this circus that's going to come with this Tebow Sanchez thing is just going to sink them in any chance.
Well, it's even getting worse now because now Rex Ryan's saying he didn't want to pick Stephen Hill. You have to go check. Are we claiming players because of their salary cap? There seems to be a split going on here right before our very eyes. But, you know, Buffalo, to me, we're going to learn a lot about Buffalo in the opening day of the game. Can Ryan Fitzpatrick, can they protect him against the Jets? Because it's going to be a challenge for them to protect him up there in the Meadowlands. And if they do, that's a game that Buffalo, if they're a good team, they're going to be in that game to the fourth quarter, and they're going to have a chance to win it. I'm not saying they're going to win it. I'm saying they got it. That's the way you have to position yourself in opening day weekends, because there's so much that you can't prepare for because you don't know.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at it. They're at the Jets week one, home for KC, at Cleveland, and then home for New England week four. And if they can get out of September 3-1, I think they make the playoffs or come close. But, you know, they have to come through in a couple of those. They play New England. Every year they play New England tough in Buffalo. So I'm not willing to rule it out. I don't know if I totally buy the whole Fitzpatrick was hurt halfway through the season thing. It seemed pretty convenient. I feel like we would have heard he was hurt before it came out, you know, but...
I'm not buying. I mean, to me, the problems, as we talked about before on the podcast, his offensive line prohibits him from having to expand the throws down the field.
Right.
You know, when you looked at him last year, when you just reviewed the whole 2010 season, he didn't throw the ball down the field.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he wasn't hurt in 2000. So what he did in 2011 is the same thing. They do a great job of utilizing what they have in terms of the players and the system of offense so that they don't have to put their offensive line into a situation where they have to really pass protect.
Yeah, remember that game, the Jets, when they just had totally figured out what he did? And he was just helpless. They got killed. They lost like 35-8 or something. But he just – all they did was just swarm the line of scrimmage.
It was almost like they had nobody deep and they just took away all the short routes. And and that's going to happen on Sunday when they play, because the Jets are going to do the same thing. They're going to dare him to throw the ball. The Jets are going to walk into the stadium saying they can't protect us. They can't protect all our schemes. And we're going to get after them. There'll be guys running free, but that'll be no big deal. We'll be able to get to the quarterback before we get rid of the football.
And then Buffalo will say, "That's fine. We're just going to keep punting to you, and we'll score on defense." Who are you throwing to? All right, we got
to punt. The punting play might be the best play in the game.
The Bills might punt on third down.
Up as the personal protector, yeah.
Oh yeah, they made the yeah. That's true. All the punts might decide that game. I think the Bills punt on third down. NFC East is probably the most difficult division to figure out, and you could really make a strong case for any of those three teams. And I think it would be stupid to say this can happen, this can happen, this can happen. The one thing I will say. If DeMarco Murray, if you look at what he did those last eight games, if they can just keep him healthy for 16 games, don't you think, like, if people would say that Vic is like the most important swing guy in that division, I feel like if Murray can play 16 games, that totally changes the ceiling of the Cowboys. Do you agree?
Yeah, because the Cowboys, to me, I'm waiting for the Cowboys to be that expansive playbook offensively. You know, I'm waiting for the Cowboys to really make me want to come in here on Monday morning and watch what they did and say, man, that is really innovative what they're doing. Because sometimes I don't feel that way. And I think sometimes the Cowboys rely so much on the skill of their players. And if they do that, then they need a player like Murray, who is very skilled and very talented, to get them over the top. I think they'll be better on defense. I believe their offensive line, because I think Bill Callahan's an outstanding line coach, I think their offensive line will come and really play better. I think, you know, the concern is going to be who is the third receiver and who is the second receiver, because I have no faith that Dez Bryant can be the second receiver and still be an effective player.
Even though there is a chance he could go for like 1,500 yards. That's the weird thing about him.
Well, yeah, it is, but what's got to happen is he's got to be able to prove that when people roll the coverage or change the coverage, that he'll know what to do, and he's got to do it consistently. Mm-hmm. I'll never argue with anybody that he can't be great, that he's not a unique talent, that he couldn't just, you know, score 50 in a night, you know, just go off. But the reality of it is can he consistently do it? I just haven't seen that.
So, all right, at gunpoint, who do you like coming out of that division?
You know, I picked Philly coming out of the division because...
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Really?
I don't know why I did. I think maybe because I just wanted to go to the Dunkin' Donuts here and not get harassed. you know, I think that's probably more than
reason.
Anything.
I can't come up with a counter.
You know, I think it's just more of that than anything. It's like, you know, look, Philly... Everybody here in the area, well, but you know, used to be everybody was holding their breath with Michael Vick. Now that Nick Foles played so well in the preseason, there's this attitude, Vick gets hurt, we got Foles. Well, you know, Foles is playing against really high schoolish type defenses in the preseason in terms of scheme. So I don't know if you really want to root Michael Vick off the lineup yet. So I think you need to be a little bit cautious there. And then I'm thinking, well, they really haven't changed defensively. They still make the same mistakes they've always made. But for some reason, I think it was Dunkin' Donuts' influence that I went with them.
Do you like the Bears at all to potentially unseat the Packers for the NFC?
No, I don't like any team that's old on defense, and I think the Bears are old on defense. I think they'll be good in September when they're healthy, but I think the wear and tear of their team, and I think offensive and defensive lines, when you look at the Bears, I think that's not the strength. I love Cutler. Cutler, I got a lot of grief for not making him a blue or red quarterback, which he is, but I put Schaub in there because even though they both were hurt, I thought with Cutler playing in a new offense, I went with Schaub over him, but I really like Cutler. I think Cutler could be, you know, he's the one player that you really have to account for in terms of if he's playing at that high level like he did some games last year, he can carry the Bears.
Well, and remember right before they had those injuries, there was that one week when we all thought the Bears were the sleeping giant in the league, and then all of a sudden it fell apart, but... seems like they're better than they were at that point last year. I agree with you, though. There's something I don't like about the Bears. Like, for instance, you must have seen the Urlacher stuff this week where he was just saying, my knee's just never going to be the same.
When players are saying that, they're basically, you know, I mean, look, here's what's going to happen. He's going to go on the field. And he's been such a vital part of what they do that he's not going to be able to do all the things that he used to be able to do, and that's going to make him more of a liability than an asset. And now where are they? And I think that their defensive front, I mean, Peppers is in the same boat, his age. Now, you know, it's a team that relies on speed, athleticism to be good on defense. They're very well coached in terms of the scheme they play, but can they hold up without their great players? I don't know.
Give me two wild cards out of this group. The two of the three NFC East teams, Bears, Lions, Falcons or Saints, Seahawks.
I think the Seahawks, to me, they're the best wild card team that I've seen right there of all the ones. The next team I would say would be, you know, probably go with Detroit, and I think it's a toss-up for all of them. I really do, because they're all going to play each other, all going to beat up on each other, and it's going to be who's healthy at the end of the season the most and who's going to win. And I like all the teams. I mean, it could easily be Atlanta. I'm not against any of those teams. It's just, to me, when the teams play away from home, sometimes they're not. I think Detroit, I'm going to go with the quarterbacks. I think Matthew Stafford, to me, would be the reason I would go with Detroit.
And Detroit's a team that, we see this sometimes, you take the leap, you rebuild, you take the leap, a la the Chiefs a year ago, make the playoffs, then you come the next year, everybody expects it to keep going, all of a sudden the inexplicable step back. And then that next year you make the step forward again. Do you see that happen with the Lions?
Well, I think the Lions, as long as Stafford stays healthy, I don't think they'll take the step back. I think they're still a good football team. And they have even more weapons to handle. But their running back situation is tenuous at best. And that's got to concern you. I mean, if they had two of the running backs in New Orleans, not counting Mark Ingram, they could really be a dynamic running game. But right now with Best on IR, Mikel LeSure not being there, you know, I think if I would have been in Detroit, I would have liked to sign a running back this offseason, whether it was Michael Bush or somebody, to really help them. I think that would have solidified their team going into the season. It could have helped their defense, too.
I thought they fell asleep at the wheel there. And it's not like those guys weren't floating around, you know? Like, they could have done Michael Bush. They could have done Sed Benson. Like, just get somebody. Get a body.
Well, I think they needed a better than a Sed Benson. I think they needed, to me, it was if you could get an elite player at that position, especially when they spread you out, they're so dangerous.
Like who?
That you could. I'm not saying Michael Bush is elite, but I think Michael Bush would have been a nice, perfect complement for what they do offensively.
I like Michael Bush. Hey, listen, if they had gotten him, I think he would have been he would have been in the top four rounds in a fantasy draft.
You know? He could have really, I mean, he would have, you know, he could have done some things for their spread. Because to me, the back makes the spread more effective. It's not adding more receivers. Like this whole notion that we're going to draft Michael Floyd to help out Larry Fitzgerald, to me, is just the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard in my life. Because they can't block anybody. Unless the Cardinals can get somebody, the defense, to count to five Mississippi, they're not going to complete a pass. So, you know, I mean, Michael Floyd's not helping out Larry Fitzgerald at all.
Right.
So, and until you can control the middle of the field, it's very difficult. And I think Bush could have helped Detroit control the middle of the field, which would have made Calvin Johnson more effective. Now, that being said, I mean, Detroit has some cap concerns. I mean, they're a team that's really tight in terms of how many players they have and what they've spent on players. So that makes it a little more difficult to just go out and sign a running back.
The Calvin Johnson.
But I'm with you. I think I would have done that. I think that, to me, would have been an area that I would have been pounding the table. We need to get this handled.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, running backs are both overrated and underrated, you know? It's like when Barnwell did his trade value list and only Ray Rice made it in the top 50 out of all the possible running backs who could have made it. It seemed weird, but at the same time, because year after year, the Packers and the Saints and the Patriots have proven you can win by committee. On the other hand, if you don't have anybody, that's also a major problem, too. So
yeah,
you gotta
it's a huge
a
problem because, yeah, now all of a sudden you can cheat. The box is lighter. You don't have to worry about it. You're not the running back makes it much more effective. And I think that's what – and it allows you to get control of the game. And the New England Patriots last year could never really get control of the game because they couldn't really run the football effectively. Green Bay never could get control of the game, even though their defense gave up all those yards. When they were running the football, they could get control of the game, and I think that becomes more effective. And I think that's why Green Bay wants to be. Look, I'm against running the ball in terms of this theory you have to establish to run. I'm completely against it, but I think it adds an element of toughness to your football team, and I think it allows you to control the game. And in that context, I'm completely supportive of the running game.
Two more things, and then we're done. We never talked about the Super Bowl champs, who yet again being discounted.
Do you think Tom Coughlin just sends the, you know, just is thankful that Jets are just over there?
It's been a godsend. That and the schedule. Everybody looked at their schedule and were like, oh my God, they'll be lucky to win 10 games. That's it. Now nobody talks about the Giants. It's perfect. We were talking about it on the phone last week, and you said that, you know, they are what they are. They're an incredible single elimination team, but sometimes over the course of a 16-game season, you know, that can catch up with you. Do you see any chance of them, you know, going 8-8? Like, I feel like it'd be, I can't imagine having the playoffs without that team with all the talented guys they have.
You know, it depends on their matchups are always on a weekly basis. As certain teams they'll look really good against, certain teams they won't. I think the reality of the Giants is they're so mentally tough, they're so conditioned to go to war, that it's hard for them to be a 500 team. I don't think there'll be just 8 Sundays where they won't play well, or Monday nights whenever they're playing. I think there'll be more than that, and I think they'll win 9 or 10 games because they can just out-tough you, and they know they can win. And they have confidence in the way they are coached, and they have confidence in the style that they play. And look, the quarterback makes plays. I mean, he's won 2 Super Bowls making plays. Both plays that he's made are highlights, and you wonder how the ball ever got in there or completed, but both of them are on record. They're right here at NFL Films. I mean, he does it, and it's proof.
Yeah. Last question. Any players that you feel like are just going to break through this year?
You know, someone else had asked me the breakthrough question, and it's so hard to really – we've talked ad nauseum about so many players, but, you know, like, what's a breakthrough play? Like, I think Flacco, is he a breakthrough candidate?
Yeah.
Because I think he can take his game to another level, and I think he's going to have to take his game to another level for them to be really effective. You know, I think that's what I'm counting on as my breakthrough players, Flacco taking the step forward and really demonstrating that he can be, you know, a dominant – he belongs in that same category.
Ooh, I'll rephrase. How about a breakthrough unit? Like something like the Seahawks secondary.
Well, look, I think Seattle's defense is a breakthrough unit. I think that whole team is tough to play, especially when you go up there to Seattle with the crowd noise and have to deal with them. And they can match, you know, we haven't talked San Francisco this whole conversation,
no.
But they can match San Francisco's physicality. One of the few teams in the West that can, and that could allow them to win some games out there, and which I think would get them a wild card spot. I don't think they're better than San Francisco, but I think they can. I don't see Alex Smith having that breakthrough season. I still think Alex Smith will be exactly what they want. Let him run the offense at the line of scrimmage, get him in the right play, and limit how many times he has to make an impact on the game.
But yeah, they made such a big stink about improving the receivers and all the stuff they did. Do you really think it was an improvement?
Well, I think, look, for the 49ers to show improvement, they have to be a better third down team in the red zone. And that's where those receivers are going to have to make a difference. Randy Moss, whomever they throw the ball to in the red zone on third down to keep from kicking field goals is going to determine how successful they are offensively. What they do between the 20s and the 20s have been very effective for them. You can't argue with that success. It's third down in the red zone. That's why they kick so many field goals, because they couldn't convert third downs. They've got to be pristine in terms of being able to do that and be effective at doing that. And I think that's where the receivers are going to have to show up.
Mike Lombardi, tell us where you're going to be this year on television.
I am going to be with new show First on the Field, which is Sunday mornings from 7 to 9. Nobody will be up on the West Coast, but I'll call Jacoby every morning on my way in here so that he gets up.
No, Jacoby will be awake because he wouldn't have gone to bed yet from the night before, so he'll be watching.
And then I'm going to be working out of NFL Films, doing around the league on a 4-day basis, so it'll be good. I'm looking forward to the season, staying here. No travel. I can't get to go to the man cave this year. They're keeping me locked down here.
We're going to miss the donuts. What about inside the NFL?
Inside the NFL on Showtime as well. Thanks, Bill. Good assist there. That's a Steve Nash play right there.
Thank you. That's what I'm known for, the sneaky passes. Is it is it Sims, Nance, and Chris Collinsworth, and then you jumping
in? No, it's Sims, JB, and James Brown, and Chris. And then I don't know. We're going to have a rotating guest. I mean, I'm sure we'll try to get you on it. But
yeah, good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that.
ESPN will be throwing their body in front of that. So Warren Sapp is no longer on the show.
Warren's not. We're just going to have 2, so it'll just be Phil and Chris arguing back and forth. Hopefully they'll have enough time that I can get schlepped on the show every now and then.
Hold on. I'm not done pumping my fist yet that Warren Sapp's not on the show anymore. Hold on. I'm almost done. Oh, I'm there. Okay.
Go easy on big boy.
I know. No, he's a good dude. With that said, I really like this year's cast. Mike Lombardi, we will be talking to you throughout the 2012 National Football League season. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Bill. Right. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you
soon.
Bye-bye.
So I get the sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.